Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration. For those parents who have their kids college bound, it starts pretty early. Start thinking about it nowadays. Well, in junior high, that's when their public school will tell them, at least the student, that they need to start thinking about what they're going to do with the rest of their lives and plan accordingly. The parents may be socking away money very early, maybe from birth, to see to it that they have a college fund ready for that kid to go. And then comes the day when they start sending out all those applications. Is being able to pay for it enough to get your kid into the college of their dreams? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about a new study about the benefits of stay-at-home moms. Joy Pullman joins us. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Evasion and a recent column titled Study: Kids Whose Moms Don't Work Full-Time More Likely to Get into Stanford. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there. Thank you.
The calculus on the part of many parents is if we want our kid to go to an expensive or an elite school, we both have to work for several decades during that child's life so we can afford it. What's missing there?
Well, there's a couple of things missing there. The kind of flip thing I was about to say, but which is also true, is you don't want to work a bunch and save up a bunch of money if you want to, if you're putting your kid in an elite school. If you have fewer assets, you'll get more financial aid from them. But the underlying thing that I was going to talk about is also there's this new study out from the Institute for Family Studies. I'm a researcher that actually I've followed a lot of his work for some time. His name is Nicholas Zill. He's done a lot of really good, interesting work. So his latest is a study finding out actually that for families where if you control for all the other factors such as, you know, income, education level, race, demographics, the usual kind of demographics like that, kids are much more likely to go to a selective university such as Duke or Stanford in a two-parent home if their mother either works part-time or not at all. And the biggest effect was seen among families where you have the traditional father is the breadwinner, mother's the homemaker role, but in the families where the father is the breadwinner and the mom works part-time was a pretty close second to the achievement of their kids really surpassing those of all other kinds of financial arrangements among the parents.
So that's kind of the correlation. Do we know why it tends to make it easier for a child to get into a good school if mom isn't working full-time?
I mean, the short answer is yes. This study, the author in his study speculated, of course, that, you know, kids benefit from having attention from their parents, which is, as I write in the piece, a very obvious thing that anyone with any common sense already knows, you know, or anyone who has any experience with children or human beings. You know, if you have caring, warm, sustained attention from someone who loves you very much and is, you know, working to make a good life for you, obviously you're over the long run, when there's more families like that, among those kinds of families, the kids are simply going to do better.
So that's just kind of the common sense. Children who are exposed to their parents, just in terms of sheer time and attention, mm-hmm. more than other children, benefit that way.
Oh, absolutely. And we know this all the way going back to, you know, so I've read a lot of studies about early childhood. I mean, I have a personal interest in that. I am a mom of six kids, and they're all very little. You know, it's interesting to me to learn about human development because I have human development happening in front of my eyes very frequently, very intensely. So from within the womb, you know, and then immediately upon birth, babies' connections to their mothers is extremely important, you know, laying a foundation for the rest of their lives. And that, of course, doesn't mean that I've done this too, right? You know, you can certainly make mistakes and you can recover, you can make up for it. There's room to improve. there's, you know, forgiveness and there's improvement, you know, for things that we might not have known or haven't done well early on. But in general, the better you can do early on and throughout the child's life, of course, the more likely that your child's going to grow up to be happy, well-adjusted, successful adult. So if, you know, so if you're giving your baby attention when the baby is born, I'm just trying to think what thing that I, you know, interesting factoid that is running through my mind should I pull out here? You know, for example, the babies literally, you know, they track along with their mother. They learn communication patterns from mother and from father, from interacting with them. So literally researchers have done, you know, brain scans of very small children, and they find them kind of, it's like mom and dad are doing training wheels for verbal and interpersonal communication for their child. The baby adopts and develops and grows communication patterns, how to respond, you know, what's appropriate behaviors in a variety of situations. Mom and dad basically, you know, train the baby's brain. So if you're in there having interactions with your kid, the more interactions that you can have, what they call it in education is you're scaffolding for the baby. You're creating this infrastructure and the baby, or if I'm thinking, I just had, you know, a metaphor pop up into my, it's kind of like when you're growing cucumbers or peas in the garden. You put up a trellis for the little cucumber or the little pea to grow up. And that's what your many interactions are doing with the baby. You're creating a trellis for the little mind to grow up, to learn, oh, when people, you know, express a face this way, it means this. You know, oh, when people say this, here's how I respond. And the earlier and the better and the more interactions that, you know, babies have, the more socially adept they get, the better adjusted they get, the more emotionally secure they get. You know, the bigger brains they get and so on and so forth. You know, everything is just better the more that children have access to that from their parents and predominantly, and especially the early years, their mother.
Talk about the broader societal benefits that accrue not just to individual children, but to society as a whole when women don't have to work.
Right. And this is a really interesting thing that, you know, it's a quiet part that women are not supposed to say out loud. We feel pressure because it's very clearly communicated to us socially that it's not okay to say what we really think and what we really desire, which is for the majority of women, quite openly, we want to have a healthy and happy family. We really thrive on relationships and we really love them. But women are conditioned in our society to instead to derive their value and see themselves in a more masculine way in how much income and career can you earn. So it really prevents us from doing the traditional sort of female work that we have always done and providing a massive benefit to society by providing, you know, the thing that women really bring to the societal table, which is relationships, human connection. And so, you know, when women do their thing, when we do the thing that we try, again, this isn't every single woman is not oriented this way, but as a group, women tend to be more absolutely resoundingly shown by research and, again, common sense, to be more focused on interactions and relationships. And so we do a lot of things unpaid, work that has huge benefits for society. Just one of them is just basically teaching, you know, little barbarian children how to love, how to be someone who is cared for and cares for other people, to not be selfish, to, you know, to work with people, to listen to them, to care about other people. You know, and that is something very, very hard work that mothers invest into our children that have benefits to society. I mean, just think about it. Do you want to have a country, a neighborhood, a community where there are more selfish people or less selfish people? Do you want to have a country, a neighborhood, or a community where people are good at interactions when we can communicate and understand each other and solve differences and problems more adeptly or less adeptly? Do we want to have a nation and community and neighborhood where people have their needs for love and companionship and emotional connection met, and we know how to reach out and form those sorts of bonds with each other? Or do we want to have, you know, communities and families where people are isolated and lonely? Obviously, we all want the sort of and nation and community where we have more of the benefits that intense mothering and fathering provide to children. And we are seeing fewer and fewer of these being passed on to the next generation when women are diverted either from choice or actually the research shows that it's mostly necessity. Women are pulled from what we tend to prefer to do, which is investing into human relationships. We're pulled from that by economic necessity more and more in today's economy.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about a new study about the benefits of stay-at-home moms. When we come back, we'll discuss the fact that women generally want possibilities for less employment rather than more. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
This is a short ad, and I don't have time to explain the whole thing to you, but you and your family need a good Lutheran church. You need this for spiritual nourishment and training, and for the support and community that comes from like-minded Christians. Your children need Lutheran friends who can become Lutheran spouses. If you don't have that where you live, you should move. One of the places you should consider is Fort Wayne, so that you can attend Redeemer, maybe send your kids to Redeemer Classical School, or just get your homeschooled kids involved with the school. Besides the church, Fort Wayne has lots to offer, including jobs. If you want to talk to families that have done just this, picked up and moved to Fort Wayne for the sake of the church, we can introduce you to some. And if you want to come for a visit, we can even help with housing. Life's too short and your children are too precious to live where you aren't spiritually fed and cared for. Your job, your income, is not the most important thing in your life. Find Redeemer Lutheran in Fort Wayne on the internet and drop us a line. We'd love to help.
Ad Crucem is proud to support Christian education for students of all ages. We offer posters of the Lord's Prayer, Martin Luther's morning and evening prayers, the Three Creeds, the Small Catechism, and more. Additionally, we offer baptism, confirmation, and marriage certificates. Stock up now for the new school year and ensure your learning environment is distinctively Lutheran with these quality products. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethany Lutheran, Fairview Heights, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Arcadia, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Henderson, Nevada. Emmanuel Lutheran, Frankentrost, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, St. Cloud, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee. And Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joy Pullman is our guest, managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about a new study about the benefits of stay-at-home moms. You point out that while the prevailing wisdom is that women want to live just like men, that is fully dedicated to full-time jobs as their primary identity, women actually want less employment. Talk about that.
Right. And this is something that has research behind it going back several decades. So I was actually recently reviewing the book Bowling Alone, which was published in 2000 by the sociologist Robert Putnam. It was a bestseller and incorporates a lot of new research that the author did, as well as a lot of things by other people. It's a very study-rich book. And in it, so he is looking at the decline of social and civic life in America since 1965, pretty much, was a kind of the watershed year for America. It used to have this extremely intense, actively, civically, and community-engaged culture, and we have just, that has declined, is shot right off a cliff since 1965. And so his book tries to explore that from as many angles as possible to try to understand how and why that happened. And so one of the things that he explores as contributing to that is the rise in dual income households, which of course means, well, actually not just dual income households, but actually in this case, specifically single mothers, because of course, single mothers are, you know, need typically to work by themselves to support themselves and their children. And so what he found as part of, and so he overall found, which I found really fascinating, that the rise in working women contributed to, as best as he could estimate, about 15% of the decline in civic engagement. I mean, as a working mom myself, I can just tell you, we have less time for inviting people over for dinner parties, for hosting game nights, for volunteering for local, you know, charitable organizations, for showing up for that extra meeting or event at church, you know, all those sorts of things, you know, because our time is being paid for by somebody else, you know, and so that reduces what we can do outside, you know, with the rest of our lives that are available after that. And so that's just, you know, common sense. There's no value judgment, I think, in saying that, you know, just say, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to be working for X number of hours, those are hours I cannot devote to other things, which typically for women include these social and community building sorts of things we're talking about. But another thing that he found that I thought was just fascinating, because I am a woman who appears to be unusual. I work partly because, in large part, because I really enjoy it. I find it very stimulating. It's also a great break from, you know, the intensity of kids. So I'm very lucky in that respect. But what he found is actually that the majority of women who were, the increase in women working over the past now 30 years ago, so let's see, since the 1980s, was almost all of it was women who did not want to be working full time but felt compelled to do it out of economic necessity. So we hear in the media all the time, and again, like I mentioned earlier, there's this social pressure for women to value themselves in terms of a job. But really internally inside, you know, women would prefer, and we see this in surveys all the time, women do prefer huge, you know, by huge margins, part-time and flexible work, because we want to be able to tailor our economic and our professional interests, which we definitely have. But we want to be able to fit that in also with having a life, with having a social life, with meeting, you know, spending more time with our family and with our friends. But that's really not happening, you know, in America today. What we, you know, women are really, there's discontent that's showing up in surveys. And you know, I understand it. I feel it too, you know, myself and other working mom friends of mine. It definitely is a struggle. And there's, you know, we have conflicting feelings about it. And there's a huge tie between this also and kind of the shift of our underlying economy, as well as, I mean, the fact that people just aren't having stable marriages anymore. So, you know, if we have a huge rise in single motherhood and in divorce and broken homes, and obviously that is a major factor in pressuring women to have to pull in a paycheck and a larger paycheck, not a, you know, more of a freelance or part-time or not a crucial, you know, breadwinning paycheck to the family. So while the narrative in the media is all about, you know, it tends to be, you know, positive girl power, all of that. And there's, you know, there's definitely aspects about that, but really under discussed is the extent to which women really feel like we wish we could invest more time in our families and communities and kids. And we're being prevented from doing so either by choices that, you know, we've made earlier in life, but also choices that other people are making for us and that are outside of our control and pushing us into the workforce when we'd rather not be there or not be there as much.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled, Study Kids Whose Moms Don't Work Full-Time More Likely to Get into Stanford. You can read her columns on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you.
Oh, thank you. I think, speaking of babies, I'm going to run out and get mine. He woke up from his nap. Good timing.
Pastor Sean Denzer joins us on the other side of the break. We'll be studying the hymn, Oh Bless the House, for the remainder of our program today. He's director of worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Church and state, communion fellowship, the church year, baptism, Lutheranism. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a simple explanation series. It's a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics. A simple explanation pamphlet is perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A simple explanation series.
Timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew with Jesus on divorce, oaths, retaliation and kindness, love your enemies, and almsgiving. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.